I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard, and I'm sitting here now with Scott Hobart, better known to his fans as Rex. His band, Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys, is releasing its first new album in 10 years. It's called Long Shot of Hard Stuff. Congratulations, Scott. Can I call you Scott?
Sure, that's fine. Thanks.
Where did the nickname Rex come from?
Well, Rex Hobart was my dad, and when I was a kid, he played music around the house and stuff, and in fact, I was influenced a lot by songs that he would play and his radio and all that, and my mom too. But anyway, he was shot and killed when I was 14, and so when I started playing that music, I thought, hey, I'll take his name and we'll do it that way.
I had no idea.
Yep.
That is an intense story. Your relationship with country music, it sounds like, goes back to your family. But that's funny to me because when we first met, back when we were just pups,
Yeah. You
were a scrawny indie rock guy, kind of an art school type. I can't remember whether you were actually in art school or not, but can you talk about that transformation musically?
Yeah, well, I was in art school. I came to Kansas City in 89 and to go to the Art Institute and went for a couple of years there, but it was really more about playing guitar than drawing pictures really at that moment. And so some friends of mine were in a band and they called Germbox, and they brought a seed recording around the dorm there, and I was like, wow, you guys are really doing it. So I dropped out of art school to be a rock star, and so I did that with my band Giant's Chair, and we toured around, did a couple of records,
And that was very experimental, not country stuff.
No, not at all. Yeah, it was really more probably post-punk, noisy, but melodic, you know, big melody and a lot of screaming, but a lot of fun. And so we did a couple albums like that, and then we were on the road actually with that band out east, and I picked up a George Jones cassette because I didn't want to hear any loud guitars between shows. And so I was like, And I'd already been wanting to start writing, you know, story songs and that, and I thought, hey, this sounds familiar. And
so you decided to go for it.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about the early days of Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys. How did you hook up with the other guys in the band?
Well, from those rock days, I knew Tilden, Blackjack Snow, and we, you know, I think I told him first that, you know, I had these country songs that I was writing, and I wanted to put together a little country band, and why not? And
Tilden is most famous for putting his hands very high on his hips.
It's true. It's true. He's good at that, at least. But, you know, he said, oh, yeah. And he knew Tony Laddish from bands and former life experiences. And so he brought him in. And Tony was in a band, Sandoval, and they had steel player. And we thought, well, we definitely need that. So originally, it was just going to be a little three-piece kind of, again, I just wanted a backdrop to tell stories, you know, real sort of generic backdrop. And but then those guys, you know, were enough of musicians that they decided, well, you know, we need a real guitarist in here. And so we got Brendan, J.B. Morris, Moreland in the mix. And all those guys made up the Misery Boys.
What year are we talking about?
This would have been 97, 98.
You talked about that you had been interested in writing story songs. Do you remember the first one?
Well, I think possibly the first one may be on this record, because when we were putting together songs
for this. Your current record.
Yeah, the new one. Yeah, because we, you know, the first few songs I wrote, I did a demo early on, solo stuff, and one of the songs was Ring Ring Ring, which is on this new record, and I'm pretty sure that was one of the first few tunes that I wrote. So
what's the story in that song?
Well, you know, one of the things that appealed to me about country music was always the wordplay, and so I just liked that. First I wanted that wordplay, you know, rings, bells ringing at a church, wedding ring, this kind of stuff. And so started playing with that. But, you know, it was really just a basic story of heartbreak. You know, we traded rings in September. By Christmas, it was all said. And sold my ring this morning, and the words still ring in my head, you know.
Do you remember your first show as Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys?
I remember my first show as Rex Hobart. at Davies Uptown in the little, you know, bar room, the original bar room there. And I remember doing, I probably did about four tunes or so. And then the Misery Boys' first show proper, I kind of think we opened for BR549 by chance up at this rock club in North Kansas City somewhere. Misery Boys could probably tell you more about that.
Well, I'm remembering those early years of those shows, and there were a lot of songs that people knew, and it was kind of a social scene. Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys show was a place to be for a certain group of people, and I'm wondering if you can talk about your following.
Well, that was something that was pretty cool about going from the rock and roll world, you know, playing basements coast to coast or whatever with these punk rock kids. And then, you know, you start playing country music. And first off, when people ask you what kind of band you're in, you know, it's much easier to say I'm in a country band than I'm in a post-punk modern rock band. The people that were coming to see us were really a wide range of folks. You know, we'd get, you know, people, older folks who this was music that they grew up with too, or, you know, younger folks who had never heard this. One of the best things is to, you know, to have punk rock friends coming out to see you play, or you happen to be on the road and go into a punk rock club, because a lot of times when the Misery Boys hit the road, we were playing those kind of joints. And, you know, you have these rough and tumble punker coming up and saying, you know, I hate country music, but what you're doing, whatever it is, sounds really good.
And what do you think that's about? Do you think it's that they have an idea about country music and that you're reintroducing them? Or do you think that there is something really different about what you've been doing?
Well, I feel like what we've been doing isn't really that different. I mean, it's a pretty standard form, which again goes back to I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to have character interaction in front of this generic backdrop. Of course, by now I've learned that there's a lot more to this so-called generic music. That, you know, you become more craft. You know, you get better at it.
There is. I'm remembering a handful of songs from your early albums that crowds really knew the words to and got excited about. You knew that these were the songs that you guys were known for. Mm. And one of the ones that sticks out to me is I'm Not Drunk Enough to Say I Love You. At the risk of putting you on the spot, can you tell us the story behind that song?
You know, you just, there's moments in any relationship probably, or, you know, maybe a relationship that doesn't have much left in it where, you know, you're just like, or actually that story is about a potential new relationship, but this guy's been through the ringer so much that he's, you know.
And this guy, is this guy you? Because I kind of don't think this guy is you. As long as I've known you, you've been in one relationship that seems quite happy.
Yeah, you know, I get, you know, even my wife asks me where these songs are from sometimes. But I consider them really, in a way, sort of insurance policies. Like, I figure if I can imagine it and I can imagine the worst, then it would never happen to me. So that's kind of what happens.
Let's listen to I'm Not Drunk Enough to Say I Love You.
Love means nothing to a young man till it's too late, when love turns to pain. If you're like me, love is pain. To say the word can hurt you. I'm not drunk enough to say I love you.
This song, even the lyrics, reference being a young man. Do you think that these are the songs of younger people? I'm curious about the transition from these previous albums to 10 years later, the different kinds of themes you're exploring.
You know, I think when you're younger, you know, your first loves, failings, that kind of stuff, you know, really hits you hard, you know, and that was another thing when I started writing country songs. I wanted to write, you know, these, you know, stories about things that really affect people, have affected me, you know, in a real personal way. And so that I think in a way it's that's where it really hurts you most. And then, you know, a lot of the newer songs are kind of about, I don't know if it's jaded, but it's just kind of like, you know, pick up and go on and, you know, laugh about it. Just get on with it.
Before we move on to the newer songs, I want to do a little bit more on the older stuff, just because some of those other songs that were big from the early days that stand out, at least to me, are You've Got Some Cheatin' to Do and Forever Always Ends.
Mm-hmm.
Are those two of the ones that you would pick out as like the big deals?
Yeah, those songs are great, I feel like, and have a lot of fun playing them. And, you know, I think the lyrical mechanics inside work pretty well. And so, yeah, those would be go-tos, sure.
Talk to me a little bit about Forever Always Ends. That one's more really poetic and a little bit more somber.
Mm-hmm. I just like the idea of it, you know? I mean, you know, oh, I'm going to love you forever, and then forever always ends, it seems like, you know? And just like the faith and then the fail.
The faith and then the fail. Let's hear Forever Always Ends by Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys.
Funny how forever always ends. I'm waiting for something else to last forever. There must be something somewhere that will. But every time I hear the word forever, the heart in my chest stops cold and still. Every time I've heard.
So Rex, speaking of double meanings, there is a lot of double meaning in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's one thing I always, if I can find double meaning, I'll wrench it out. So yeah, it's got a lot.
Well, I'll give it a triple meaning because, you know, 10 years is a long time to not write songs, and there might have been a lot of people who thought you were done.
Sure.
And that was a forever that seems to have ended. What was going on during those 10 years with no new songs, no new albums?
You know, we never said never. We still played whenever the gig came up or whatever. And in the meantime, I, you know, had a long-standing gig, you know, in town at the Record Bar, and I had originally that was going to be the Misery Boys, but in the meantime, I picked up other guys, the Honky Tonk Standards. They were originally the Honky Tonk Stand-ins, but they became more regular, so they got to be the Standards. And so I kept playing with those guys and kept my chops up. But then, you know, the Misery Boys and I, we'd just play. We never wrote anything. We never practiced. We just, if a gig came up, we'd show up and hit it and do it and make it happen. But then that's what we've been doing for 10 years.
What inspired you to dive back into original songwriting?
Jody Hendrix at Little Class Records approached us and said, hey, you know, we've got our label starting out here and we'd love to have you guys on. If you ever feel like you want to put out a record, we'd be glad to be involved.
And you used to be on Bloodshot, which is a pretty good-sized national label.
Yeah, we were on Bloodshot for our first four albums, you know, and fulfilled that contract and then just kind of, you know, did everything we could and didn't quite pop over the top. So we got back to real life. And that was the other thing we've been doing for 10 years is just kind of getting real life going on, families and
that
stuff.
A lot of you have had children in that time.
Yeah. And some of us most recently, you know, Brendan, the lead guitarist, not the steel player, which it was a misnomer in the star piece today, but Brendan and Jen, they had twins like 2 weeks ago.
Wow. So, well,
but anyway, yeah, kids and work and all that stuff. But then, yeah, Jody said, you want to make a record? And we thought, well, we've got a couple of tunes that we kind of started working on way back then, but we never finished them. And so we had a nugget to start with and then kept writing.
Are there, you hinted at some new themes and new kind of mental spaces that these songs might explore. Can you talk about what it's like to mature for 10 years and then get back into songwriting and observe the differences in yourself?
Yeah, you know, the songs from back then, like we talked about earlier, were more just like, how low can I go? You know, how far can I dig and make this the most tragic yet comedy. I mean, really, they're so terrible, they're funny if you think about it. But
which is maybe like making fun of the country music stereotype a little bit.
A little bit, you know. I mean, you're just taking it and running it and pushing it as far as you can.
They took my dog, my car, my woman.
That's right. It's all a variation on that theme. But then more recently, you know, I just whenever we started writing these, I mean, there's a couple of weepers on the new record, the old one, Ring, 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 and Every Time He Breaks Your Heart. You know, that one's sad, too. But that honestly was an old one, too, that we happened to find on a live recording. I think we played it once, but we had too many ballads at that moment and we never finished it. And so we thought, oh, well, it's got a good melody. Let's put it on this one. But then the other songs, the newer ones that kept coming were just, I was like, you know what? I've done all that crazy stuff. Let's do, let's see where else we can take the guy. Where can we take this guy?
I still love that this guy is not you, but am I correct in understanding that one of these songs comes from an idea that was your mom's?
Yeah, Lost Cause, one of the brand new ones, came out really fast. You know, my mom, she wrote songs in the early 80s for a little bit, and in fact, on one of our other records, we did Mother of a Member of the Band, which she had written. But she knew I was writing. She knew we were kind of putting something together. And she said, hey, I got an idea. I was walking the dog. I got an idea for a song. And Lost Cause I Found You. And I was like, ha, let's make it work.
So you took that nugget and you expanded it?
Yeah.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Lost Cause.
Lost cause, lost cause, lost cause I found you. Well, my friends all say I'm a lost cause, and I can't say they ain't right. Stumbling backwards here every day, and I can't sleep at night. Well, ever since I met you, I've been trying to get you, and since you said our love was true, I've been lost cause, lost cause, lost cause I found you. Well, I can't tell which way is up, but I feel like I've never been down. I can't tell my right from left, and I keep spinning around and around and around and around. Well, I'm all mixed up.
I like that little action that just happened there.
Yeah, I love that. And it's fun, listening to the difference between, you know, I haven't listened to some of those older recordings, but, you know, I just feel like I'm a better singer now, maybe. It's just funny.
And you,
if I can say that about myself.
I think you can, and I think you've also found ways to incorporate some of the experimental music guy from the past into your country identity.
Sure, yeah, you know, we're kind of the Rush of honky-tonk.
Oh, okay, that's funny. That song, Your Mom's Rollin', it does make me curious to get back to the influence of your family on your musical career.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit more about your parents and their relationship with country music?
Yeah, you know, my dad was a shoe repairman, and honestly, we lived in the back of his shoe shop for a minute down in Rolla, Missouri, back in, you know, early 70s when I was like a year old. And, you know, so from then, you know, it was always the, you know, KZNN radio, you know, country radio down there. And then my mom had a beauty shop on the front of our house. And so we would, you know, I was constantly hearing the radio. And my mom was in the George Jones fan club and all that, you know, and their records. So I really grew up steeped in it, you know, and then moved on to rock and roll, as you do. And then you kind of come back.
You have to.
Well, you got to rock.
You had talked about that your father was murdered when you were a teenager. And now you carry his name as your stage name.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like for you emotionally to take on your dad's name as part of your persona with that kind of history?
It's really fun. I mean, it really just puts a positive end to a pretty tragic thing. And it's, you know, it's a resurrection. It's a performance project in a way. And, you know, the biggest kick I ever got about it was seeing, you know, years ago, like 2004, one of my records came out, and we got, you know, one of the New York Times music critics put us on the, you know, top 10 list of most underrated bands that had come out that year. And just to see my dad's name, you know, because I still, when I see the name, I consider it my dad's name, you know, Rex Hobart. And to see it in the New York Times as being, you know, and we started this band sort of as a whim. And then to be like, you know, sort of authenticated somehow. And, you know, just that.
That's really cool, though, that also it sounds like it gives you a way to stand outside of yourself and observe your own successes and feel proud in a very not of yourself, like of this guy.
It's so true. And, you know, it was sort of also taking on that name gave me the permission to write the kinds of songs that I might not have felt as comfortable writing as Scott Hobart, the rock guy or whatever, because, you know, those songs were abstract lyrics. And so, I mean, there's some personal lyrics there, but it's definitely, real abstract stream of consciousness stuff. But
we've talked a little bit about how things were different when you came back to songwriting after 10 years away. But were there also familiar parts of yourself that you got back in touch with?
Probably the most familiar part of myself that I got back in touch with making these new songs so fast was just making music with the Misery Boys. You know, just those guys were just, you know, blood brothers, really. You know, we've been in the van for so long. you know, it's been about, it's really coming up on 20 years, probably 18 years since we started this thing. I don't know.
I hear that you have a texting conversation that goes back 15 years.
Well, I don't know if texting's been around that long, but pretty much as soon as we were all able to do it, we started ribbing each other, and it's not stopped.
That's a huge texting chain. Do you ever, like, scroll back in it?
I try, but if after a while, unless I don't really understand my phone, which is totally possible, you have to delete them or you get too many going on. I mean, they're probably still out there sometime. And I think it'd be fun to have a tell-all biography made of them. You know, that would just be ridiculous.
What's it like to be friends and bandmates for that long?
It's like being married for a really long time, you know?
Not everyone's had those experiences. I'm going to need you to say more.
Okay, sorry. It's just like it's a time capsule. You know, we got back in there and started writing songs at our drummer's house. And it was just like, you know, it's almost like, even though we're all a little balder and a little fatter and a little more wrinkly or something, you kind of see each other as these, you know, post-adolescent dudes still, you know.
Sounds like siblings.
It is. It's, I would imagine so, yes.
Let's hear another song from the new album before we have to go. The one I want to hear next is Here in Hell. Anything people need to know about this song before we listen to it?
This was the first new song that I started working on. I was that picture of our band photo in the treehouse. I was sitting up in that treehouse trying to get a start on a record. And this is the first song that I made.
Let's hear Here in Hell.
Just this morning it was over and done. She told me where I could go to have my fun. I found this neon hellhole with a party atmosphere. And here I sit in hell with a beer.
Beer is a recurring theme.
Yeah, we like some beer sometimes.
Any feedback from your following about the first songs that you've released through social media? Do you have the sense that your audience has matured with you in those 10 years?
I'm not sure, probably. Although, I really feel like these songs and the sounds and the themes are so timeless that it's not really that big of a jump, you know? But I feel like, you know, people are interested, I think, and, there's some cool new sounds and ideas, I think, you know, so it's a new original Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys record.
Is this exciting for you? I mean, did you think that you were going to have another record?
No, not really. I just thought we'd kind of ride our own Western cut blazers into the sunset or something, you know, but, you know, we did it. It was kind of like, you know, when the opportunity came up and we just said, well, why not? Let's try it. Maybe the worst thing that can happen is, you know, we get three songs out or something, you know.
Will you be touring with this album?
Not really touring per se, and not immediately. The strategy is more like, because of family and, you know, a lot of stuff going on, we're going to try to push the record you know, as a record for a while first, and then maybe next year we're going to try to hit some festivals to, you know, capitalize on it a little and just get the record out there first, which before, you know, we'd be at new places on the road and no one had heard it yet. And
There's one cover song on the new album, Shotgun Willie.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired you to cover that Willie Nelson song?
It was just, you got certain records that you put on when you're cruising down the road on tour, and that was one that we just thought was so crazy, that Willie Nelson record. It's really funky, and we thought, hey, let's, you know, add to the variety of this crazy record and put that on there. And
let's hear just a second of this cover of it. This is Shotgun Willie by Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys.
Sits around in his underwear, biting on a bullet and pulling out all of his hair. Shotgun Willie's got all of his family there.
So Willie Nelson, he's like, you know, he's like it in country music, you know?
Yeah.
What's your relationship with country music as a genre, do you think? I mean, your website says you're too country for country. What does that mean?
I don't know what that means. It probably doesn't mean anything. We're just a country band, playing, you know, what for our age is the golden era of country music, you know, 60s, 70s sounds of country music. Although I do think we've pushed the envelope a little bit this time on a couple of places, but...
Well, congratulations on your new album, Scott, a.k.a. Rex. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Rex Hobart and the Misery Boys will release Long Shot of Hard Stuff Saturday night at Westport Saloon. The show starts at 8. That's all the time we have for today's show. To listen back to any of the conversations you've heard this morning, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have them all available for download later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, the food critics will join us for a pizza show. Where's the best slice in town? Find out tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Sylvia Maria Gross and Matthew Long Middleton. Thanks to Patrick Quick for visiting the tornado siren bunker and gathering the crazy sounds we heard at the beginning of today's show. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date.